Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Dr. Green.
What is it?
Patient for you, Dr. Green.
Can't the intern take it?
Well, it's for you.
What time is it?
5 o'clock.
All right. Can't the intern take it?
It's Dr. Ross.
Dr. Ross? I'll be right there.
Come on, Doug.
Mark, you boy. Oh, did I wake you up?
Yes, you did.
You are a real friend. I want you to know that.
That's all right.
Real friend.
Yeah.
Do we have
getting
a room?
Out of bed to me.
Yeah, room 3 is free.
Room 3 is free.
3 is free.
3 is free. 3 for 3.
Yeah.
There we go.
Come on, Doug.
All right, I got you.
I spy a young George Clooney in there, too.
Yes, sir.
30-something years ago. Yeah, Anthony Edwards, NER. Anthony Edwards, I mean, boy, for 58 to be drafted first overall by the Minnesota.
It's the first time for everything, Carm. never thought I'd see it, but.
No, I know, right?
Can you imagine the show we'd be doing in Minnesota today?
I can't imagine, my friend.
Quite a bit of criticism.
Why would they draft an old white guy?
Athletically, your best years have got to be behind you when you turn 58.
I would think. It's Carmen and Yurko, Midway Jeff Mellish sitting in for Yurk the rest of the week. That is the Twitter poll at Carmen DeFalco. Anthony Edwards is most synonymous with ER, Revenge of the Nerds, Top Gun, or the Minnesota Timberwolves. Top Gun and ER running 1 and 2. Actually, ER is running first now. It just changed. 36% of the vote. About 35 for Top Gun. So you got like 2/3 of the vote there, even more than that, actually.
Carm,
talking 70%.
That was the opening scene of ER back in 1994.
Really?
Swear to God, that was the pilot. That was the opening scene. And you know that Anthony Edwards was the headliner.
More than George Clooney.
Absolutely. No one knew who George Clooney was. I mean, people knew who he was from Facts of Life, but they didn't think of George Clooney as mega superstar.
No.
Anthony Edwards was the headliner when ER began back in 1994.
When ER began and they said starring George Clooney, I said, Rosemary's Nephew? I mean, come on. Edwards was without a doubt the star of that back then. But then, you know, that George Clooney's awfully good looking. Would it surprise you to learn that I didn't watch much ER. I mean, like at that point, it came on when I was
94.
Getting out of high school.
So yeah, I was gonna say, what were you? You had graduated high school at 94 by that point, or
I'm class in 94. I had one real TV obsession, I'd say, through the 90s because I was getting Seinfeld.
I know.
My TV obsession. I know you are, and so like I was never. Not that I didn't watch ER. I don't want to say that, but like. I can't give you much on the history of ER, certainly after the first couple seasons. Like, by the time I was getting out of college, what did I care about ER anymore?
No, you know? I understand. I was 13 when ER debuted, so it was, like, perfect, like, right in my wheelhouse, you know.
Yeah.
It rolled right in. I think Thursday nights right at 9 o'clock, I'd watch that hour drama, and then it was bedtime at 10 for me, so.
That's right. All right, we're going to get back to the Bulls and the draft and the start of free agency. If you want to chat with us about the Bulls, we'll get back to some calls here coming up. 312-332-3776. It's a transition or segue into the Bears for a little bit as they go into bye. I know. I mean, it's like, and I think we'll do a lot of unpacking of this next week, too. It'll be a short week with the holiday and everything, but they'll be on bye, and it'll give us maybe a good chance to kind of pour over some of the things that have gone wrong and how they're going to fix it. We've been wrapped up with some other stuff this week with Theo and the Bulls draft, but our buddy Dan Wiederer joins us now from the Chicago Tribune at Dan Wiederer on Twitter. Danny, how are you, buddy?
Boys, I was hoping we could talk about 80s NBC Thursday night television.
Let's do it.
Cheers, right, Dan? I mean,
yeah, cheers, the Cheers Night Court combo in the 8 to 9 hour. I mean, let's go.
See, we're close in age. I mean, that's more my wheelhouse. That was phenomenal stuff. I'd rather talk about that.
We could go back to MASH if you guys want.
I love MASH too. I mean, in all seriousness, like, you know, we've all been Bears fans a long time, right? And we've seen, we're sort of used to great defense, run the ball, terrible offense, or at least no passing offense. Johnny Morris is still this franchise's all-time leading receiver. Like, we get it. Okay, we get it. This is what we're accustomed to. But I got to say, Dan, and maybe I'm a victim of the moment here and there's some recency bias, but this kind of feels about as bad as I can ever remember and then some on offense right now.
Well, 2004 was atrocious, if you remember the year that they used the 4 starting quarterbacks, and it was Quinn and Krenzel and Chad Hutchinson off a surfboard in California. And then production-wise, they were pretty pitiful that year as well. But, Carm, this has been so prolonged now, and it goes back, you know, it goes back to the late 2018. But if you start with the opener of 19, with the expectations that this team had of their championship window being open, and this is it. This is a 3 or 4 year window where we're going to have a bite at the apple and see if we can win a Super Bowl. And then to have this be now a 26 game stretch where the ineptitude of the offense has been so extreme and so pronounced. And every time that you think they hit rock bottom, they somehow managed to free fall a little further. And so Monday night's game was another example of, oh my God, you can't even get to 150 yards against the Vikings defense that has been getting torn up by just about everyone this season. You can't even score one touchdown to win a game that the Vikings have basically gift wrapped for you and given you. And so that leaves you heading into the bye with this is unfixable. I mean, it's unfixable. What you're trying to do is, you know, put it together as best you can. But this is so ugly right now. And to your point, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, no, Dan, no, it's fugly is what it is. It is awful. We're at the point now where you look at it, and I'm looking at the last four games, and it's still, you know, I've done the post-game show now for each one of those, and you look at the point totals for the Bears, and it's honestly, it is actually impressive that they put up the number of points that they did when you look at the display, because they've added a couple of garbage touchdowns against both the Saints and Titans where they've made the scores look a little more flattering than they actually were. I mean, it's been awful the last four games. And, you know, I guess I wonder, after they come out of the bye, Dan, if both guys are healthy, Foles and Trubisky, if both guys can actually go and be under center. I know Matt doesn't want to go back to Mitch, but with as bad as the offensive line has been, I don't think Mitch is going to be, you know, any revelation. But at this point, if you're trying to make a playoff push, I almost feel like you need some mobility that Mitch can offer. And believe it or not, as bad as he can be at times, he gives you something in the run game that you don't have right now.
So I've had this conversation with Waddle both over the phone and via text, and essentially, we're arguing two different things and both making our point, and we can't get to a middle ground, because my answer to that, Jeff, is who cares? I mean, all of this ends in a funeral, right? And so all it does is change, like, the first two sentences.
We're all going to die.
Right? Like, it just changes the first two sentences of the eulogy, but the bottom line is you're marching to the end of something that's going to be another colossal disappointment that then causes you to reflect on just how much significant change is needed at Hallis Hall. I'll say this, because when they come out of the bye, they're going to have to make a decision on who their starting quarterback is, and they're in the unenviable position right now of having both guys having significant injuries, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have to weigh that. But think about this. You're Mitch Trubisky. You're playing now as much for 2021 Mitch Trubisky as you are for the 2020 Chicago Bears. You're coming off an injury to your throwing shoulder. The last 2 years when you've come off an injury to your shoulder, the game you've come back has been one of the ugliest of your career, 2018 versus the Rams, 2019 against the Saints. Now you're asked to go on the road on a primetime stage with the national audience sort of zooming in on all your flaws, and you're asked to keep up with a Packers offense that is averaging 30-plus per game, right? If you're Mitch Trubisky, are you saying, you know what, I think I'm going to hold out until the Lions are on the schedule the following week, and then my shoulder feels a little bit looser and ready to go? And so this is just where they're at right now, and either guy you put in there, I don't think is going to produce any sort of uptick in the production that we've seen over the last 10 weeks.
Well, and Yurko has hinted at that, guys. I mean, obviously Mellon knows, and you know, he's been saying it since last week that Mitch Trubisky now is in all likelihood in self-preservation mode, and that's the advice he's getting from those in his camp and his agent. His Bears career for all intents and purposes is over, and he, like you said, Dan, he all of a sudden has to start playing for Mitch Trubisky 2021, where he's going to get a fresh start somewhere else. So I think that's a very salient point. I wouldn't be surprised if even beyond the Packer game, he still says he's not right because he's thinking about his future. At this point, what does he owe the Bears? And before you get all upset, and fans don't like to hear that kind of stuff, this is a business. Yurko speaks from a position of knowledge playing in this league, knowing how players think, now more than ever with the amount of money that's on the table. This is a business. He's done here, and he probably is thinking about himself. And I don't blame him.
And listen, you know, if they were 7-3 and the arrow was pointing up and the offensive line was healthy and solid, you might have a different conversation, and you might say, man, this could be the springboard for me to sort of revive my career. But the way all of these dynamics fit together right now, I don't see what's in it for you to play that game the Sunday after Thanksgiving with everything that we just talked about. I mean, we are having some of the most depressing big picture conversations that we can have about this organization. And just 4 weeks ago, they were 5-1. And it's just another example of an organization that just has no way to find success. And when they find it, they have no way to sustain it. And it just leaves us kind of chasing our tail year after year with, you know, different versions of the same story.
Dan, one of the worst things for Bears fans out there, I think, is when you consider how they won those first three games, you know, in probable fashion. Those three games put them in a position now where they, you know, maybe fooled people into thinking they had a real chance to make some noise in the playoff. And now we've seen it unfold the way a lot of people really expected it to once you saw how they got to that spot. I look around the league, and I think you can make the argument that the Bears are in one of the worst positions across the entire NFL because you take into account the fact that the Jets are likely going to be picking, you know, first or second overall. And as bad as that looks, if they make a change with their head coach, they have, you know, a high pick where they can build around a franchise quarterback. The Bears are stuck in this spot where they're probably going to finish with 7 or 8 wins, maybe even make the playoffs if the NFL expands to 8 teams, and then find themselves in a spot where I don't know what the solution is. You've got an aging defense and an offense which looks awful.
No question. And you use the operative word there in what you just said. And the operative word there is stuck. They are absolutely stuck. And I wrote after Monday night that you know, they're going to be a cemented fixture in those in-the-hunt graphics on television. But the only thing that they're in the hunt for right now is potentially a new general manager, potentially a new head coach, potentially a new starting quarterback, and potentially, if you want to go as high up the food chain as you can get, a new team president. And so this is stuck, right? This is the definition of stuck. And it's a definition of a franchise that hasn't sustained success since the late 80s, early 90s. And you know, again, it's so ugly right now. Offensively, the other night, guys, you know, I get the privilege of covering that game in person and then having to rewatch it the next morning to go through some of my film review. And the rewatch is sometimes twice as painful because you see these moments where you're like, okay, Monday night, as bad as your offense was the entire game, you get the ball back with 5 minutes left on the Viking side of midfield, with a chance to go down for a game-winning touchdown drive. You complete a 10-yard pass in your first pass to Cordarrelle Patterson. Now you're first and 10 at the 38. This is exactly how you steal wins in the NFL. And that drive stalls out. You get the ball back with 44 seconds left. Nick Foles gets cracked in half. Tyler Bray comes in to throw a bunch of wild passes. And you walked out of that game after getting a kick return touchdown, 2 takeaways from the defense, a blown extra point by the Vikings, you know, 2 big punt returns from Anthony Miller, and you still couldn't find a way to beat a middle-of-the-road opponent. And it just, all it tells you is exactly where the season is headed, and it's that dead end we talked about at the start.
Carm, before we let Dan go, I have to let him know that a prominent former Chicago Bear has texted me and has said that he's obfuscating the points. We all know we're going to die, Dan, but it's about how we're going to party on the way we get there. And Mitch Trubisky can be a fun little party on the way, whereas Nick Foles, we know, is just a depressing death march.
So now we got to party with Nick Foles.
All I would tell you is, you know, Mitch has 40-plus starts, and I don't know how many of those you guys were partying during. Right?
not many, believe me. I
don't know if that's the party you want to sign up for.
Dan, we were drunk at halftime against the Bucks.
Listen, I want the Patrick Mahomes party, okay? I'm still hung up on that. I wish I was invited to that guy's party. Never get over it.
That's the afterlife, Carm.
Yeah. Dan, have a great, enjoy the bye week, all right? At least you got that going for you. And have a great Thanksgiving, okay, buddy?
I'm going to clean out the shed today, guys, and I'm excited about it.
So. Good work. See you, Dan. talk to you later. There's Dan Weider, at Dan Weider on Twitter. We got one. We want to take a Bulls call before break?
Yes, Bishop is in Chicago Heights. Bishop, you're on with Carm and Yurko. Jeff Miller in for Yurk.
Thank you for having me on. Listen, I really can't say anything about this Bulls draft pick. But to me, I would have went with, what's his name, Isaiah Stewart, good center forward that you would have had. I think the Trailblazers had got him but traded him away, but I really don't understand this pick. I just can't. I mean, we talk about the future, but we need somebody that can play now. But I just don't know about this guy.
Well, I mean, nobody knows a whole heck of a lot because he probably didn't watch a ton of Florida State. Go put on some tape, though, and see what you think. I mean, he's I'll tell you, the body's impressive. And for being only 19, he just turned 19 a few months ago, you know, he's going to get stronger. I don't know that he'll get much bigger, obviously, at this point, but he's definitely going to get stronger. But for a big, lanky kid, he's bouncy and he's quick. And he, like we were saying earlier, he was a point guard in high school, so he's got that ability to handle the ball. But the one thing that jumps out at me when you watch him is obviously he's going to be, I think, already a really good defender. I mean, they are help side shot blocker, that kind of thing. He's strong. He can hold his own in the post, but he's bouncy and you like those kinds of guys. And this is where the NBA is going. They want sort of positionless guys that can, they can do a bunch of things pick and roll wise, especially pick and roll defense, and guys that can run the floor and handle the ball and shoot the three a little bit. So that's what we can say. It's a little bit of a project, but he, you know, in their minds, he checks those boxes, you know? So we'll continue to discuss. If you want to jump in, 312-332-3776. That's the number. Isaiah Stewart did stay close to home, I guess, and was drafted by Portland from Washington. We will be right back. It's Carmen and Yurko.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
If you miss something, the podcast is out there. The all-new ESPN Chicago app is here. Get it now.
In 1904, the United States decided to throw a little weight around and, who is it?
Mr. Pizza Guy.
Again?
Mr. Pizza Guy, sir. Quarter of the double cheese and sausage.
Right here, dude. Am I hallucinating here? Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
Learning about Cuba. Having some food.
Mr. Spicoli, you're on dangerous ground here. You're causing a major disturbance on my time.
I've been thinking about this, Mr. Hand. If I'm here and you're here, doesn't that make it our time?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Now you think Sean Penn there, right? But a brief appearance from a very young Anthony Edwards.
Edwards with some flowing locks back in 1982.
Locks.
My goodness.
That's right.
You know, it was kind of like, you know, in some ways, it was like Patrick Williams at Florida State. His usage rate was low, but when he was on screen, he was impressive, Carm.
That's a beautiful analogy, Meller. Good work.
Just better times are ahead. That's what we're looking for here in Chicago.
That's right. Better times are ahead for Anthony Edwards, so we're hoping the same thing. And we're celebrating Anthony Edwards since he was drafted first overall by the Minnesota Timberwolves last night. And, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, another one of my all-time favorites. See, that's like right in my wheelhouse. Meller's in for Yurk today and tomorrow. Talking NBA draft, Bulls start free agency tomorrow as well, although I don't think they're going to be very busy, and they don't have a lot of money. Let's face it, they're going to be an over-the-cap team. They've got their biannual, I think, and their mid-level exemptions, mm-hmm. right? They're probably going to add some shooting, add a point guard. They decided to let Chris Dunn walk, not a surprise. They want some shooting. I think that's why they put the offer into a Valentine, but they're going to look for a little bit more shooting, and then as we talked with Joe Cowley about an hour ago, this is going to be like a feeling-out year for this franchise probably. I don't know if they made calls right away to see if there was a lot of interest in their guys, Jeff. I'm not sure they did. If they did and they realized that there wasn't much interest and nothing really peaked, nothing really made them perk up and say, ooh, that's a deal we have to make. Maybe this is a year with their people, their coaches, their personnel guys, their player development guys working with Zach LaVine and Wendell Carter and Lauri Markkanen. And this is a year where they're really going to evaluate what they truly have in those players. And if they want to start flipping some of them at the deadline and beyond, they will.
Any of the assets on this roster, if they would have dealt them, they would have been selling low. I don't know. Like, I don't know. It can't get any lower for, you know, any of these players.
It can't get any lower for Lowry.
Yeah,
right,
like what do you got? Like, if you part ways with any of those guys, whether it was Lowry, Wendell Carter Jr., you know, even Kobe White, I don't think that was ever on the table, but really I don't think any of those guys' value is going to really get any lower at this point. Like, anything you could have traded them for last night, as bad as think of some of the worst case scenarios, as bad as a year might be for any of these guys, I can't imagine they can't get the same thing next offseason.
Right.
Like, you know, what are you getting, a late first rounder? If, you know, again, if you're packaging Wendell Carter Jr. up to move up two spots in a draft that doesn't have any real superstar,
exactly.
then, you know, what are you doing there? That's, you know, you're not accomplishing a whole lot.
Speaking of Golden State, too, and, you know, that was a leak from their camp. What a devastating piece of news yesterday. And it turns out that it sounds like it's an Achilles, not the other ACL. It's sounding like the Achilles for Klay Thompson. I don't know if that's been confirmed yet. I haven't looked on Twitter recently.
I haven't seen it confirmed, but no, that's the
rumor. That's the rumor now, right? So,
of course, other leg.
Klay was rehabbing his left ACL injury. That's why he missed all of last year. And during a workout yesterday, it sounds like Klay Thompson tore his right Achilles tendon. That is devastating. That'll obviously cost him another year. And for a player that is, you know, this would be 9 years in, I guess, for Klay Thompson, when you start to get to that age and you suffer those kinds of injuries, not that his game is predicated on speed or quickness per se, like a Derrick Rose, but those are two devastating injuries for an older player. For a jump shooter, maybe not as bad, but wow, what can you say? That's just terrible news.
As one of the teams that is one of the most fun to watch in the league when they're going, if not the most fun because of Steph's ability to shoot and Klay's ability to shoot, we may have seen Klay Thompson's, you know, best years now. I was willing to say, okay, maybe he can come back from the ACL and be close to what he once was, but man, two devastating, you know, leg injuries on each side.
On each leg.
I don't know if he'll ever be what he once was.
That is brutal. Did you guys see the social media snafu last night when the Bulls made their second round selection? Everybody was going nuts because people were tweeting out a picture. Apparently there are two Marco. How do you say his last name? Is it some? Cowley said it to us. Is it Simonovic? Is that how you say it? We need Yurko.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. When I went,
the Slavics, I defer to Yurko.
Simonovic? I don't know.
Simonovic? I don't know. You never know. Anyway,
I think it's a Yurkovic. I think it's Simonovic. I don't know.
Okay.
There's two of them, though. There are two Marco Simonoviches or Vicks, however the heck you say it. One of them's 35 or 36. One of them's 21, and a bunch of people were tweeting a picture of the 36-year-old. And I think even, like, someone from NBC Sports Chicago accidentally tweeted the wrong one, and people were going, the Bulls just drafted this. He looks like a guy playing in a rec league. He's got no hair. He's 36 years old. And they said, wait a minute, the Bulls drafted this guy, but it turns out to be a much younger Marco Simonovic.
See, you're always keeping it local. I thought you were going to point out the social media snafu when the Minnesota Timberwolves tweeted out a photo of Anthony Edwards in his doctor's getup from ER.
In a scene with George Clooney.
We got a bunch of calls, Carm. Let's listeners weigh in. James is in Gurnee. Hey, James, you're on with Carm and Yurko.
Hey, Carmy, what's up, boy?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, real quick, there's a lot of chatter going on. People are mad to taste of Mitch Trubisky in their mouths because we this guy don't know much. But you got to put in perspective. In the NFL draft, you have 3 to 4 years of these guys. I would have made a mistake. I'm picking Watson, so I didn't know much about Mahomes. But having said that, these kids in the NBA draft are so young now, man. You just don't have much tape. This kid seems really athletic. So I just want to see the difference between people saying, oh, it's the same thing with Trubisky. There's a lot of chatter going on. You can't. Two different words. There wasn't an exact pick in this year's draft. Like, they didn't, like, pass somebody up to go on a limb. They just, you got to give these guys a chance. So I'm saying, like, we went on a limb with Trubisky, obviously. I would have took Watson. I didn't know much about Mahomes. I'm just saying, people got to put in perspective that the college draft, not even.
It's apples to oranges, James. I totally agree with you. And look, he might turn out to be a bust. I don't know. I'm not telling you that he's not going to be, but it's not. It's not going to be because he didn't start as an 18-year-old at FSU. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't the NFL draft where you've got to wait. And quarterbacks, if you're not your team's starting quarterback, something's – at North Carolina, like, I get it if you can't start at Ohio State. You can't start at Alabama. You can't start at Oklahoma and you got to transfer. I sort of get it, right, Jeff? But, I mean, if you can't start at North Carolina as a quarterback – until your third year, that's probably an issue.
Yeah. It apples to oranges, not even the same comp. I don't even like the cross-sport comparisons a lot of times. It's hard enough to find a comp that works inside your same sport, much less when you go cross-sport. I think sometimes it's a reach. Carm, let's go out to I-88 and say good afternoon to Kev. What's up, Kevin?
What's up, Kevin?
Hey, guys. Yeah, you know, I think obviously no no-brainer draft pick available. So if you're going to swing for the fences, try and hit a home run, this is the year to do it because – you kind of have a pass. If it doesn't work, I give him a pass anyway from a fan's perspective with the pandemic and not much film and the nature of the draft with minimal workouts and, you know, everything. It was just a bad look for talent evaluators, in my view. Three things stand out. His body. He shot 84% from the free throw line. with that, that type of frame, you know, that there's a high correlation between above 80% free throw shooting and above 38% three-point shooting. So I'll take that. And then number three, average one block per game in the ACC. You know, that's the best league. That's the SEC of, you know, basketball for football, you know, that comparison. So getting a block a game from the wing in today's NBA, I think, you know, why not take a chance and see how it works? I've got no problem with it, and let's see how it goes.
Kevin, thanks. I'm glad you brought up that one block a game. Look at his block and steal rates per his minutes played. They are extremely impressive, and I think that's what excites NBA teams most, and probably what excites Billy Donovan most right now, Meller, is his ability, even though he's probably going to be pretty raw offensively. I think they believe he's going to step in and already be a difference maker on the defensive end of the floor.
Yeah, I think that's one thing, like you said, you can come in your first, you know, you're in the league and make an impact, just do that defensively and let everything else, you know, they can, you know, develop him from there. You know what, Carm, a lot of people have talked about how they're concerned about the fact that he, you know, only averaged 22 minutes at Florida State. He only got, you know, didn't even average 10 points per game. There's a man who knows the ACC better than you and I do, who was on this station, who said, don't let that be concerned. I want to play that for you.
All right. We'll play that coming up next. We'll take more of your Bulls calls. Carmen and Yurko Meller sitting in for the good kid. We'll be right back.
See what Carmen and Yurko are talking about on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Hey, Gilbert.
Hi, Lewis.
I got you some more reading material.
Great minds, huh?
Yeah. Hey, how you feeling?
Well, actually, I'm feeling pretty stupid.
Why?
I think I'm the only guy in the world who could break his leg playing chess.
Hey, don't get down on yourself, Gilbert. That was a very tricky move.
Thanks.
Sure. Hey, that's my dad. I gotta go, Gilbert.
Okay.
Bye.
Knock him dead.
I'll be in touch.
Yeah, probably not easy to hurt your leg playing chess. But hey, Gilbert and Lewis, anything's possible. Revenge of the Nerds. We're celebrating Anthony Edwards. He is most synonymous with...
Carm. Yeah, that was Revenge of the Nerds 2.
Oh, that was Revenge of the Nerds 2.
Of course. I can't... Nerds in Paradise. How could you...
When they go down to Miami, right?
Jeez, man. I thought you were a film aficionado, and you'd disappoint me with that.
And they flip Ogre, right? Ogre becomes a nerd.
Ogre flips. That's absolutely right. Yeah. That's where Booger finds his match, right? His belching match. He finds, like, that Zen master that can belch as long as he can. Isn't that Revenge of the Nerds 2?
Yes.
The Nerds in Paradise.
The Mr. Miyagi parody, right? Of Curtis Armstrong, yes.
My bad. I forgot that was Revenge of the Nerds 2. That's awesome. Anthony Edwards is most synonymous with ER, Revenge of the Nerds, Top Gun, or the Minnesota Timberwolves. That's the Twitter poll today at Carmen DeFalco. And ER, Meller, you'll be happy to know, about 40% of the audience going with ER, and then you got 33% going with Top Gun. Not enough love for Revenge of the Nerds in the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I think what happens is, for me, I do believe Top Gun was a, you know, a, for me, I think it's more memorable to me, but ER, it's just, you know, it was such a long run that's why when you use the word synonymous, that's why I think of him first as Dr. Green on ER. And the early heydays with a young George Clooney before he got launched into superstardom. You know, this also made me think, Carm, I don't know if you saw this, but the other day, Michael B. Jordan was named the...
Good actor.
He was named the, was it the sexiest man alive? And I was curious now, you know, thinking about Anthony Edwards, like, has anybody done more with a name that is absolutely impossible to ever become the most famous version of that? Michael B. Jordan can never, I don't know what he can do there. I can't think of something, no matter how successful his career is, he could go on and become the greatest actor in film. I don't know if he usurps Michael Jordan.
Probably not.
You know, it's
probably not. And that's why he's got to use the B, right? Like, he's got to be Michael B. Jordan. He can't just be Michael Jordan.
No, there's not. You're right. Yeah,
like Michael B. Jordan sets him apart a little bit.
That's true. That's the end. But he has to do it. It's the only way he could actually, because otherwise, whenever you say his name, if you don't have the B in there, nobody ever thinks of the actor first. As as great as he's been,
And he's good. He's like that young
phenomenal
man's a good actor.
Dude.
And he really is a handsome. I mean, like he is. He's sexiest man alive, worthy for sure. I mean, he really is a good looking kid. But he's great as Apollo, young Apollo.
Yes, Adonis Creed.
Adonis, thank you, Adonis Creed. He's phenomenal.
Carmi's great in Friday Night Lights.
See, I don't watch Friday Night Lights.
He was on the final, I think the final two seasons. He's great.
Well, I became first, The Wire is where I was first introduced to Michael B. Jordan.
Right, exactly.
He was Wallace in The Wire.
Before we play that Jordan Cornette sound, though, speaking of Clooney, I heard Waddle and Sylvie were telling the story yesterday. I'm assuming it must have been during Waddle's world, but I guess Clooney confirmed like that old story that he once gave his 14 closest friends $1 million each.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys hear that? He confirmed
I've heard the folklore of that story, but I did not see the confirmation of it.
Right.
Confirmed it. And like so and he said that he actually went, he found somewhere in LA where he got the money. Can you imagine walking out of somewhere with $14 million in cash?
Let me ask another question. Do you guys each have 14 friends worthy of getting $1 million? I don't.
If I had as much money as George Clooney, yes.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Let's see. How many of my friends work in programming here? Do we have 14 people, Merck?
How about the poor bastard that's 15th? Can you imagine, like, you're his 15th best friend? You're like, damn, you just missed the cut. I wonder who the 15th best friend is. And does he have to pay taxes on that? They're not getting $1 million in cash, right? Or can you give a gift
cash,
like that?
I think if it's cash, yeah, you can kind of... You give your buddies a big duffel bag full of $1,000 bills.
Can you imagine? What would you do with that money? You can't take that money anywhere if you're his friend. A bank's going to want to know where the money's from. The government wants to know where that's from. You'd have to pay tax on it at some point.
That's why you don't put it in a bank account, Carm. You bury it in your backyard.
Yeah, I'm going to bury $1 million. I got news for you. I'll pay the tax, okay? Even I'll pay the 30. What would that? That'd be like 300.
Yeah,
you're talking
almost. Yeah, almost 400K. Probably almost 350K. It's a gift.
But that's income tax. What's the gift tax? I don't know. Not sure.
I think it's substantial, my man.
If it's 25%, let's say it's 25. I mean, you're talking about $250,000. Let's say that's what it is. I'll go ahead and pay that so that I don't have to bury it in my backyard. Because the minute somebody finds out, I'm getting hit up for what's buried in the backyard.
If cinema has taught me anything, Carm, I have to ask you a question. Do you trust your wife?
I do trust my wife, and that's from Shawshank Redemption.
A government allows a one-time gift of $1 million to your significant other.
I do trust my wife, so maybe that's what I would do. I would then gift it to her. I don't know, but it's a crazy story. It's unbelievable, but the guy's worth George Clooney's got to be worth almost, I'm guessing. He had that tequila company. He's probably worth like a half a bill.
Yeah,
if not more.
For
him, it's nothing.
He, according to Forbes, his net worth as of 2020 was $500 million approximately.
There you go. I said he's better than half a bill. Unbelievable.
Yeah. What's 7% of your net worth amongst friends, right?
That's what I mean. It's nothing for him. It's a cool story, though. I just want to know, I want to know the logistics of it all. Like
how it works.
How he gets the money. What do the friends do with it? You can't keep $1 million in cash in your house. So do they take it to a bank? Do they invest? Like, what did they do with it? What did they buy? I'd be fascinated to know, like, all of the stories and all the logistics of all that. It's so cool. All right. How about Jordan Cornette? Now, Jordan does ACC games for the ACC
Network.
Yeah,
he's one of the faces of the ACC Network. Yeah. He also hosts with his wife, Shea Pepler Cornette, on Sundays here on ESPN 1000. You hear them go around the NFL for you every Sunday afternoon.
Right. Say about Williams?
So for anybody who's concerned about the lack of playing time for Patrick Williams, how can you draft a kid fourth overall who failed to average more than double digits in the ACC? Jordan Cornette said, don't worry. Don't worry your pretty little head about that.
Leonard Hamilton is OG triple OG. I mean, this guy is the man. I called him for years leading up to the season, the Rodney Dangerfield of college basketball. In terms of he gets no respect. But people are starting to understand what he's doing there. And that leads me to the other gripe that you're seeing everywhere. Everybody talking about this guy came off the bench in Patrick Williams. He averaged 9 points per game It's the platoon system that Coach Leonard Hamilton has perfected at Florida State. Kevin Gelly was another guy, and I'm not saying he's made noise in the NBA yet, but was another pick, I think, that went first round that was their sixth man, and he was one of the best players in the ACC that season. What Leonard Hamilton does is he likes wholesale line changes. He approaches that thing like in a game, and when I talked to him about it, he said, I like to have guys on my team and ask any one of them. These are guys that are begging me to take them out of the game, not for more minutes because of the style we play. I want to hit teams with waves and overwhelm them. That's what Florida State did. They won the ACC this year and had a real good chance to win the national championship with that style. So don't read into the numbers, 9 points and 4 rebounds per game from Patrick Williams. If you do that, then go look back at Devin Booker's numbers at Kentucky in his one season, because they also came at waves at you. My man averaged 10 points per game. Would you like Devin Booker in a Bulls uniform, everybody? Just chill out on the numbers.
So there you go. You feel a little bit better. Yeah, I heard him say that this morning to Cap and Jay Hood, and I was like, there you go. That's all you need to know. Don't worry about the stats in college. It is, he's going to have an opportunity. He's going to play more than 22 minutes in the pros. I promise you that. And the sky's the limit for this kid, as we heard also from Arturis earlier today.
Yeah, that was well put by a guy that obviously has seen him play and knows that league. Somebody on Twitter pointed out, too, that, you know, look, let's say Patrick Williams doesn't come out and he goes back. Maybe he's, you know, much more of a superstar player mm-hmm. in his second year.
Yep.
Russell Westbrook wasn't a starter in his first year at UCLA. Now, he went back for his sophomore year, and he was unbelievable. But, you know, Russ didn't start as a freshman at UCLA. So it's not the craziest thing that an 18-year-old kid new on campus is not going to start. But he did play big minutes for a team, like Jordan said, won the ACC. And had the tournament not been canceled, would have been a hot pick to make the Final Four and maybe win it.
Real quickly, a couple of people have called in about the George Clooney thing.
Yeah.
I guess last night on Access Hollywood, they did a story on it. And he gave everyone in $20 increments up to $1 million.
Wow.
And he paid the tax on each.
And he paid the tax.
He paid the tax. Yeah.
So there you go.
That's Debbie from Little Rock, Arkansas said that.
Space Bart on Twitter says, put the money in a few different banks and safety deposit box and tap into it when you need it. It's like you're,
absolutely.
If you got to go on the run somewhere, if you're in the organized crime life, you know where to hit your safety deposit boxes. All right, we'll take one final time out here. Merck, you had some baseball news you said you wanted to share.
Two baseball nuggets for you, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
We'll do that when we come back next.
Get Carmen and Yurko pods on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
With six different receivers, and this time he lost one, and it's picked off at the goal line. That's Buda Baker. Buda Baker out in front. Can Metcalf track him down? Can he chase him down? And he does to save a touchdown. But what a play by Baker.
Look at what happens. They're all right there. They come snap to the line of scrimmage to try and get it off quickly so that he got confused on the defensive side. Buda Baker did not. But watch the play here by DK Metcalf. He is flying down the field. Baker thinks he's going to walk into the end zone, and Metcalf just refused to let it go. It was unbelievable how much ground he made up. That had to be 10 yards on a very fast Buda Baker, and he just tracked him down.
Rematch tonight. That was, about a month ago or so on Sunday Night Football. Thursday Night Football, the Cardinals travel up north to take on the Seahawks in Seattle tonight, and they're an underdog again. The Seahawks were a 3-point favorite in that game. They lost outright in overtime. Seemed like they had it control in the fourth quarter, couldn't close the deal. They're a 3-point favorite at home tonight against the Arizona Cardinals. Do the Cardinals have the two greatest plays of the NFL season in 2020? So far, I should say,
well, against them, or they've taken part. Yeah, they've taken
the two greatest plays of the 2020 NFL season. That play and then the touchdown to Hopkins on Sunday.
I think you are correct, Carmen, because I was going to say we have a rematch of teams where the best play of the NFL season took place. And you can call him DK. I'll call him DeKalen Zacharias, as I like to do.
Very nice.
But, I think they have taken part in the two best plays of the season, the Hopkins, the Hail Murray, if you will. And which, by the way, quick aside here, I take offense to the fact that it's easy to call it the Hail Murray, but I think DeAndre Hopkins made the better play on the play. So I think if you're going to name it something, he has to be, his name has to be prevalent in it.
The Hale Hopkins?
Or the, how about the Hop Murray? It's not right, quite, I mean, Hop I guess Murray. It's a reach. Maybe it's not,
the
you know.
Is it like
how,
the
about
quarterback
the, how about the Hop Mary? Yeah, the quarterbacks get too much love.
Yeah.
Too much damn love for the quarterbacks.
What about the Hale Merkins?
The Hale Merkins is pretty good too, actually. Just because we can say Hale Merkins. I like the Hop Murray. That's actually not so bad. I like the Cardinals again tonight just because, I mean, Seattle's defense, guys, it's – do you guys realize that the Seattle Seahawks –
it's awful.
The Seattle Seahawks are 26th in the NFL in yards margin with that offense. That'll tell you how bad the defense is. And just to put that in perspective, that Seattle's 26th in yards margin, that means they're in minus 382. They've allowed 382 more yards than they have. And think about that with their offense. The Bears are 27th at a minus 392. That's how, like, I can't lay 3 points with Seattle with that defense right now. Plus, Murray's really been good as a dog in his career. He's 12-4-1 against the number as a dog, and he's 3-0 this year with three outright wins.
Carm, the Seattle Seahawks secondary, the pass defense, is giving up 353 yards per game. That is more yards per game than Peyton Manning averaged in his record-breaking season.
Wow.
I mean, the opposition is throwing for more yards than Peyton Manning did the year that he went absolutely crazy and set all those records. So
he broke records, yeah. That'll tell you all you need to know. And even getting Jamal Adams back hasn't helped him that much. They just really struggle to stop anybody, and I kind of like the Cardinals getting that field goal again tonight. It could be an over, big total. It's like 57. I wouldn't be shocked. Both teams can really run the ball. Obviously, nobody does better than Arizona because of Murray right now averaging about 7 yards a carry. But should be a good one for Thursday Night Football.
So. I am excited. But you mentioned yes. The Hale Merkins. Merkin has some baseball nuggets
Merkin,
for us as well.
Yes.
All right, two baseball nuggets for you guys. This one from Jesse Rogers, article earlier this morning. Wrigley Field has now been given landmark status. This designation will give ownership access to millions in tax credits.
Wrigley Field didn't have landmark status?
Fenway Park and the old Tiger Stadium have landmark status as well, along with Wrigley Field now.
I didn't know that. Oh, if you would have asked me had Wrigley had landmark status, I would have said absolutely.
So that's baseball, but Soldier Field, the columns have landmark status as well.
Yes, they
remember,
do.
Remember, that's part of the reason we have the spaceship on the lake.
Right. So it gives Rick its tax credits,
that's what Jesse says. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And they love those tax credits.
And then the other good news or exciting news is that since we're now the flagship, the home of the Chicago White Sox.
White Sox, baby.
White Sox will be the first Sunday Night Baseball game on ESPN against Joe Maddon, Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, and the Los Angeles Angels. Yes, Los Angeles.
Yes.
I like how you're still referencing Albert Pujols on the marquee matters in some ways.
How about Rendon and Trout? I mean, really, do you need to mention Albert Pujols?
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, really, Shohei, come on.
Pujols, I'm sorry, Pujols, I'm going to put him on the back burner these days.
Yeah, well, since it's La Russa, I figured we'd mention Pujols since they have a connection.
Sure.
But you are the marvelous Merkin, I'll tell you that. The Hale Merkin, the marvelous Merkin,
well,
that's what you are, my
man. It's awesome. They're going to be on ESPN, so you can watch them and then turn down the volume and listen to them on ESPN 1000.
Absolutely. Thanks to all of our guests today. Thank you to Tracy Butler. Thank you to Joe Colley from the Sun-Times talking Bulls and Dan Wiederer from the Tribune talking Bears. And thank you for listening and calling and participating. And we're going to wrap the week tomorrow with lots of fun stuff. NBA free agency starts. It'll be a football Friday, even though the Bears are on bye. Great job by J.R. Strauss and Randy Merkin. Meller, great stuff. See you tomorrow, buddy.
Sounds good.
All right, everybody have a great day. Greenies next. Waddle and Sylvie up at 2, and then Bleck and Abdallah tonight at 6. See you tomorrow, everyone.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord has split you.
Stay tuned. We'll have more.
I think the cool people liked it.
I don't think that's whack. I think that's dope.
Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia!